You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, episode 26 for Wednesday, June the 1st, 2022. This is JJ Seppin with CBD and returning once again, our co-blogger and friend and polling expert guru, call him what you will, Dave from Florida. Gentlemen, good afternoon. How's everybody doing?
Doing great.
Well, the big news that broke yesterday, the unsurprising news, yet still incredibly enraging and infuriating news, that Michael Sussman, Hillary Clinton's mouthpiece, was found not guilty of lying to the FBI. Surprise, surprise. This is just, as I said, we expected this. We spent the last 4 years at Ace of Spades saying, nothing's going to happen, nothing's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, when the inevitable does happen, everybody just freaks out. So, but it's no surprise, but it is, Dave, as you were saying before we went on the air, one more straw on that very, very weak camel's back.
Oh, I do want to say on this, and you know, you talking about polling. Let me just be clear, because I got into it a little bit of argument with a couple of commenters this morning on this very topic. This stuff does matter. And it does matter to a large number of people. And you can see it when you go into the polling. You look at Biden approval numbers, right? And everybody just focuses in on that number, you know, whether it's 43% or 42% or 35% right now, you know, and everybody just looks at that number. But there's more data that's in there. If you go into the crosstabs on those polls, you can see what's driving it. What are the issues in particular? And this is one of the very motivating issues with the population right now is institutional corruption. Okay. And, you know, it resonates. It resonates higher than climate change right now. So if you want to know what's driving people, you know, this is an example. It's not the only example. And, you know, as I was saying before we went on the air, you know, it's one of those examples. It's not the straw that breaks the camel's back, you know, but it is just one more piece of evidence. And I thought you were very good this morning in what you were talking about, JJ, in terms of Margaret Cleveland and her piece, which I agree is, you know, she's a little bit Pollyannish, you know, a little bit too much of a silver lining on this. But the fact that you do have admitted under oath corruption within the FBI and then have a jury completely say, hey, you know what? We don't care. We know he's guilty. We don't care. We're going to let him go anyway. That kind of thing really does resonate with the heartland. Outside of D.C., people are paying attention to that and they don't like it.
He's 100% correct. But my only question would be, does it matter what the heartland is paying attention to? I have infinite faith in the American people to push aside huge, huge problems until it lands in their backyards. And until, you know, Joe Smith gets railroaded by a corrupt jury, he's not going to care. Is this egregious enough? Is this obvious enough? Is this a slap in the face to what I have always called American exceptionalism? And I don't know. I simply, every time something bad happened over the last 10 years, my first thought was, well, this is the one. This is going to convince America that something needs to change. But time and time again, I was wrong. Even the corruption in the FDA and the obvious power grabs throughout the world, really, not just the United States, over COVID, I thought would be the straw that broke the camel's back. And yet it wasn't. Is there pushback? Absolutely. Is there significant enough pushback and significant enough outrage in the United States for the people to rise up, not physically, but metaphorically, and do something about that? Dave in Florida can speak much more eloquently about what's going to happen in November, and I hope he does in the next hour or so. And yes, they will be punished, but is that going to be enough?
You know, there is definitely, it's in your face, the two-tiered justice system, or as I wrote this morning, I don't even think it's a two-tiered justice system. I just think we're living in a tyranny, and it's basically you are of the elite and support the elite, and you are one of the warders, so to speak, of this prison camp, or you are, you're one of the prisoners, like all of us are. Look at what's going on. We still have scores of people behind bars and being railroaded from this you know, J6 kangaroo court that's ruining everybody's lives from the lowliest person who just happened to be caught up in this sting operation where the FBI opened the doors and let people in and then said, "Ha, insurrection, you're under arrest for treason and we're locking you up," all the way up to people like Michael Flynn and even Donald Trump having their lives potentially ruined and destroyed for something. And then you have this, you have Kevin Kleinsmith, you have Peter Strzok, you have Andrew McCabe, and now you have added to it being found not guilty, this Michael Sussman guy. So people do see that. The message that's going to come across, of course, in the media, which is, there's this good news and bad news there, I think, is that, to your point, Dave, earlier when you said this information about the corruption is coming out, but what are people going to really remember the details of the trial, or are they just going to remember at the end, acquitted, not guilty, ergo Hillary Clinton is innocent, and of course Donald Trump is making this whole thing up? Or will people see those nuggets of information come out and be added onto the depredations and the abuses that we've had, not just in this, but now with the economy and with gasoline and with the Green New Deal and so on and so forth, and now the attempt now to take our guns away because of a mass shooting once again happening in Uvalde, Texas? So all of these things, we're sort of in the middle of it, and we can't really see it. To Margot Cleveland, she's a wonderful journalist, and she is a real journalist, but you saw her, I just looked at her headline today from the Federalist, where she says, even though he was acquitted, this is, the truth will out, and this is a good thing. And it's just, I just can't see it for now. Maybe in the long term it will, but in the interim, till we get to that point, we're going to have to go through a whole lot of hell, and a lot of people are going to have to wake up to what's going on, and really wake up and react. And that's obviously the elections, if they still mean anything, or some other black swan event that causes people just to cause Atlas's shoulders to shrug.
Well, I think part of the problem is definition of what does rising up mean. Okay, what is an expectation of an appropriate response? I mean, yeah, sure, we would like to see, Sussman in jail. We would like to see, Hillary in jail. I mean, is that a reasonable expectation for the population? And if you look historically, it probably isn't. Nobody at the very edges really gets punished to that degree. I mean, I and I'm not that much of a student of history, but go back to Teapot Dome. Did anybody go to jail for that? I'm not sure.
I think a couple of people did, but they were not major players.
Yeah, it wasn't it wasn't the principals. I mean, what actually happened was you had a political punishment. You didn't have a legal punishment. And I think that's the mark of what would happen. At least that's the way our country is set up right now, is that punishment is through the political process, not necessarily through the justice system. And let me give you an example. Okay, is this enough to maybe wake people up? Well, you remember the censorship right after 2020, obviously stolen elections. We all knew it. I mean, within the board, we were just screaming about it. I mean, I left the board for 4 months because I couldn't take the pushback that I was getting for my assessment.
Election. Yeah.
That was egregious.
Yeah, that was. And your failing was that you did not.
I did not
predict the corruption. Criminality on a scale that the United States of America has never seen. And it's a credit to you that you did not accurately predict that. Nobody could have.
So, but now look at the aftermath. Okay, after that, you went onto Twitter, you went onto Facebook, you said the elections were stolen. You were a conspiracy theorist, okay? Now, over 50% of the population believes the 2020 elections were stolen, that there was enough corruption to change the outcome, okay? Now, they may not believe that Donald Trump necessarily would have won, but if you ask them, did it change an outcome? Did it change at least one state? Over 50% of the population believes that. So it is a long process for these kinds of changes in political will and political consciousness to come about. We would like to see it be immediate. Hey, facts put on the table, people change their mind, but they don't. I mean, there's people that are heavily invested in their political perceptions and are never going to give those up. And we fall into that category as well. We have our own blind spots from the other side. But, you know, there is a large number of people in the middle, and these are the people that do vote. They do make a change within our political process that are being persuaded over a long period of time. And it can take years. But if you look at where public perception is on Roe v. Wade, where public perception is on the theft of the 2020 elections, on a whole number of issues, you see those results, and you see that every time one of these polls comes out showing Biden at a new low. Those numbers are being driven by issues, not just because they think he looks stupid on TV.
I think that's an interesting point, that you're separating the legal from the political. And I think that might be the most comforting way to look at our current situation. I know that Hillary Clinton's reputation has been sullied. I think it's clear that she is no longer considered, you know, the grand dame of American politics. There has been enough crap thrown at her by both the left and the right that she is no longer pure. Obviously, she's not going to go to jail. That will never happen unless something absolutely catastrophic happens, and I doubt that will ever happen. But that's very interesting that the gradual push toward some sort of truth is more political than legal, unfortunately. Maybe that's good for the United States. Maybe that's a way that we tamp down the most violent and furious aspects of our society by preventing wholesale imprisonment. Of course, January 6th, the innocents in jail still.
I could talk about those political prisoners for a while.
Yeah.
You know, to your point, CBD, that the political, there's more of a change there than, the, you know, perception-wise or whatever you want to say in the zeitgeist, or than the legal, so to speak, in the immediate term. Look what, maybe I'm projecting here, but it seems to reinforce that. Look at all the times, and he rightly so, when Donald Trump during the 2016 elections chanted, "Lock her up." Those simple three words somehow penetrated enough brains to have people take a look at Hillary Clinton, you know, not just in that context, but in the context of her entire career and then her association with her husband, and then to project, maybe that stuck, and it projected 4 years, 5 years later. You know, it sort of serves that projection and to what Dave is saying, that, you know, she's tainted. And so no matter what happens going forward, that is probably a good thing. And that is how the wheels of justice, so to speak, grind. If they do grind slowly, they do grind fine, if not in a legal sense, then in a grander political sense.
So if it makes you feel a little bit better, keep in mind that a lot of the people, you know, in Camp Clinton, they would rather go to jail than lose political power. I mean, Susan McDougall is a perfect example of that. You know, she sat in jail for years rather than upset the apple cart for the political machine that she was part of.
The problem, though, is that the consolidation of power in Washington is progressing at a furious pace. And, I mean, we've seen it with the Sussman trial, a perfect example. The FBI lied. The Justice Department screwed that up or acted, well, I'm not sure if they screwed it up, because I think Durham is doing a very good job, but the FBI certainly lied. Our justice system failed, and no one is going to pay any sort of price in the short term. And that's just one click of the ratchet in the wrong direction for our republic. I don't know. I'm not particularly sanguine right now about the prospects of America.
So the interesting thing. Yeah, the interesting thing to me, though, is that one of the outcomes of this trial was essentially Sussman's defense was the FBI was in on it. Okay, and that was brought forward in the trial itself. That was evidence that was produced, and the FBI didn't dispute it. I mean, if I was a juror, I would kind of, Ace pointed this out yesterday. I thought it was actually a brilliant point. If I was a juror, I might have let him off too, simply because how do you lie to the FBI when they're in on it? You know, and then from an institutional standpoint. And I don't have any data on this, and you know I'm a data guy, so I'd prefer to have data. But my suspicion is that things have been like this for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. What's happening now is we see it. That's the difference. I postulated the other day that, you know, there used to be three futures for us: totalitarianism, some kind of a revitalization of the American spirit, or you know, a stealth takeover of our institutions, and we just don't even notice it. Well, that third one's off the table now, and I would argue that that was the more preferred approach. Just do it quietly in the shadows, that nobody knows what happens until all of a sudden things have changed, and until everybody's compliant with COVID restrictions and whatever is coming out of the state. And that option's off the table now. People know it. Now, which of those other two futures is coming, I can't tell you.
I think that's a superb point. I think the problem, though, is that they feel that their power has been consolidated to such a degree that they can look at us and say, I'm quoting a movie, is fuck you, pay me. It doesn't matter that.
And maybe it doesn't.
Yes, this is obvious. This is obvious corruption and tough shit. You're going to pay us anyway.
You're not alone in that. I hear a lot of people say that exact same thing. You know, and the counterpoint I would offer is, if that were the case, then we would have vaccine mandates. We would be wearing masks on airplanes. A whole lot of things would have gone differently. Instead, people stood up, fought, you know, went to court and won in court. And I was just on a plane last weekend. I did not wear a mask at any point in that entire trip.
Well, it's funny you say that, because all of a sudden the junta is now shopping for another judge to appeal the ruling that whoever the brave judge that tossed the mask mandate on airlines, they want to have it reinstated. So, you know, all it takes is
that's the fascinating thing. Because, what end?
Yeah, well, the end was somebody
that demonstrate that masking up in airplanes, which are, let's be real here. Any aeronautical engineer will explain to you how incredibly clean the air in these planes.
Yes, but it's irrelevant, because what I was going
to—that's the point.
I know, but
it is so very obviously not based on science. It is based on power acquisition. They have control, and they will fight. They will stay in jail, as Dave pointed out. They'll stay in jail for a couple of years just to retain that power.
Bingo. What I was going to say is that there was actually, and I can't find the link to it, someone even said that there was an FDA administrator admitted, or an NIH, or whatever the alphabet soup of Reich ministeriums in D.C. is, saying, yeah, we know that it doesn't work. I mean, they literally admitted, we know that it doesn't work, but it's to preserve our authority. And those were I'm almost quoting it exactly, those three words, preserve our authority. So there you have it. That's, you just, I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's
actually, I did look into this. I did look into this, and it is a legal nuance, but what they're trying to get, and they may go for the, it's not really judge shopping. They want this to go forward, and it might take years to go forward, but you're right. What they want to do is preserve their authority to make judgments like this when it is necessary, because the way the ruling came down was it removed the CDC's authority to make blanket declarations like this in a medical emergency, which is something they want to keep in the future in case something comes along. They would argue something real.
Which is antithetical to everything that this country is founded upon.
Yeah, and I find it, understand and agree.
I find it vile in the extreme. I find, you know, I used to defend the FDA every once in a while. I think mostly it's bad, but now it needs to get burned down. Metaphorically, folks. Metaphorically.
Yes, we in the, was it mostly peaceful burning down? Oh, wait a minute, that's not right. An extremely peaceful burning down.
Don't get us canceled.
No, we're not going to get you canceled. But here's the thing, though. This is what's so dangerous about this. And from their point of view, is that if this reversal of their mandate is upheld, this is then the in, sort of like Roe v. Wade, the overturning. This can overturn the authority of the bureaucracy. And this is how America is governed these days. It's not by Congress. It's not by whatever. It's by an unelected unofficial fourth branch of government, which issues edicts that have the force of law by people who are unelected bureaucrats. And if this thing sticks, then this could theoretically be used as a weapon to overturn everything from, you know, fuel efficiency standards to you name it across the board. And this is what scares the shit out of them, because this is a crack in their armor, a chink in their armor. Can I say that?
I think it's still allowed.
Okay.
Yeah, they should be scared, because this is, I've made this argument for a while. This is how the control of the administrative state is taken back. It's the, you know, state action, individual action, overturning the edicts. You know, restoration of our rights as citizens.
On that note, let's take a little bit of a break. You are listening to the Cup Jizz. I don't know what the hell we're listening to. We're listening to the Cut. Oh, fuck it. Let's just take a break. We'll be back in a minute. See you in a second. And we're back, J.J. Sefton, CBD, and the great Dave in Florida with the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. There, I will speak slowly and enunciate so I don't sound like a gibbering vegetable like our president of the United States. And I think we're going to dive right into it. Dave, your sort of line of country, if you will, is polling and all that good stuff. And I think we want to hear your prognostications on some local issues that I think CBD was interested in. There's certainly some interesting crap going on in New York, in New York City in particular, which I will be abandoning soon for the Midwest in the next month. And
wise move.
And thank you very much. and then across the country, see what's shaping up for 2022 and beyond.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to ask Dave is, I was going to make a point using my local election. I've got a representative named Josh Gottheimer, who's a smarming little prick, typical leftist. He lies about being fiscally conservative, and he isn't, of course. He votes 95% of the time with the left. And his challengers are interesting. We've got a new guy on the political playing field of New Jersey, a guy named Nick DeGregorio. He's a veteran, impressive-looking guy, family, all that neat stuff. And he is an unabashed conservative. He wants to close the border. He wants to protect gun rights. He wants to roll back the administrative state, all the things that I like to hear. The other Republican is more of an entrenched Republican named Frank Pelota, who lost last time, and he's giving it another shot. And I simply do not know which one is genuine and which one is the fraud. Either one of them will be better than the leftist in the seat right now. But it's very difficult to sift through the incredible amount of bullshit being flung around by not only the two candidates, but by the Democrat who is pushing for Pelota to get the nomination, which tells me that his polling says Pelota will be easier to beat. That's a pause because I'm done talking.
So, and I'll be honest with you, I have not looked at New Jersey 5. So, and I only a small handful of House races I look at. I tend to more focus on the Senate races because those are usually better polling for states than there are for individual districts. But occasionally you get some interesting data. So I will take a look and give you, offhand, I'll give you some advice on New Jersey 5. But I think your gut is probably the right one. You kind of want to go for the guy that speaks to you. In general, this particular election is going to be very much a throw the establishment out. I don't want to say throw the bums out, but more of a throw the establishment out type of election. So a lot of surprising people are going to win. Like J.D. Vance would not have been someone we expected could win on any particular year, but he's going to be the next senator from Ohio. Herschel Walker is going to be the next senator from Georgia. Unless they find some dirt on him, which they're trying hard to do,
or unless they find a trunk full of ballots, which is usually what they do. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, I know, and I. So the
that's not aimed at you.
Let me focus on that particular point alone, because I get this pushback so much, and from you, JJ, and love you, man, but you make me nuts sometimes with
it. I'm sorry, that was not Belize. I don't. That is not a dig at you.
The whole Dominion thing just makes me crazy. Times. The value of polling is it's a look at what the electorate thinks. And there is value to it. Results vary from polling organization to polling organization. And mostly that's driven by the fact that when you poll right now, polling's hard. Okay. It's very hard to get accurate information. And the people that are most likely to respond to a poll are liberal Democrats from urban areas. So you end up with different results because different people weight and report their results different. The ones that go more from a, these are the results I got, I'm just giving you the results. Well, yeah, they're going to come in with a, everybody in the country is a liberal Democrat living in New York City. People who do adjustments, you know, you've heard me talk about Rich Barris a lot, who I think he's doing a terrific job. You know, he uses demographic information from consumer information to balance and determine what the appropriate results should be. And then he will oversample into different demographics until he gets a appropriate sample of each of the sub-demographics and gives a much more clear view of what the electorate is thinking. But the value to polling is to know what people think. Now, does that result in an election result? Not necessarily, because we saw what happened in 2020, where the will of the people was thwarted through, as it turned out, absentee ballot fraud. You know, I've heard people argue that the whole thing with Dominion was really a red herring to try to distract people away from where the fraud actually happened. And everybody focused in, including Trump, focused in on Dominion, where what they should have been challenging was the fraud that occurred with the absentee ballot initiatives. So in any case, you can look from a polling standpoint, you can look and see what people think and how people feel right now. And people are mad. And it's not just economy and watching their 401ks get slaughtered, you know, and paying $5 in gasoline and having to pay twice as much for milk than they had to three months ago. It is more than that. You know, these results, these polling results were starting to show up 6-9 months ago as people were just saying, you know, the whole institutional corruption within D.C. is just un-American, and we don't care for it, and we're going to vote in such a way to punish the establishment.
Maybe you did answer my question. I was going to say, well, does the polling, and you say people are mad at the establishment. Well, is the left mad that the establishment Democrats aren't going Marxist fast enough, or and that's why they're failing, or is it the other way around? Most of Americans are just, you know, incredibly livid at what's being done to the country. I have a feeling it's the latter. Thank goodness, because there seem to be a lot of traditional Democrat blocks of people that normally either would stay home to punish Democrats, or they would never cross the line. But a lot of them are crossing the line to say, oh my God, these people are out of their minds. I mean, yeah, I'm a liberal, but I sure as hell I'm not a Maoist, and this is what they're doing to me is crazy.
Yeah, what's happened? You've seen a very dramatic political shift in political identification. And what has happened is the core Democrat voter, the union household, you know, the people that used to be the populist, and I vote for Democrats because Democrats are looking out for the little guy. Those people have shifted. They've actually not, you can make the argument they shifted to independents. Well, if they shifted to independent, then an exact same number of people shifted from independent to Republican. My argument is I don't think that happened. I think those people flat out changed their party affiliation. They used to say they're Democrats. Now they're saying, nope, I identify as Republican now. And the independents are basically sitting where they always have been. They've always considered themselves independent. They still consider themselves independent. Now, where you see the support for the Democrat Party has cratered has been, I mean, obviously you didn't have it in Republicans to begin with. The independents, it has been an absolute crater. You have about a 20% support level among independents for the Democrat Party right now. Normally that runs somewhere to in the, you know, 38-45 range, depending on the election. It is an absolute bloodbath. You always have a number of Republicans that will vote Democrat, but that number is microscopic right now. And then you look at enthusiasm. The people that are enthusiastic to vote this year, Republicans and independents. Democrats, those that are still calling themselves Democrats, they're like, eh, don't really care.
What concerns me, though, is that the independent, who obviously is not voting based on some political philosophy that's deep-seated and you know, they learned at their grandfather's knee. These are people voting based on concrete but transient trends. You know, if inflation moderates from 8.3% to, you know, 2.5% over the next year, a certain chunk of those independents who are certainly going to vote Republican in November will sort of move back toward the center, and the Democrats will pick up some of those votes that they lost. And that's what concerns me, that too much of the voting in the United States is based on these transient changes that will shift back to the other direction in the next, 5-10 years.
Man, we're not going to go back to 2%. That ain't going to happen. We're heading.
That's the point I was about to make.
No. I'm using as an example. Of course, it's not going to happen. We've got 10% inflation baked into the cake for the next couple of years, and anybody who says differently is an idiot.
Let's be honest. If the Democrats had a way to magically turn us back to 2% inflation and correct everything between now and November, they deserve re-election. If they could work that miracle, then more power to them. But they're not going to. I mean, it's baked into the cake, as you said.
Yeah, I was going to say, if the queen had balls, she'd be the king. But nowadays, if you say that, that's, that's transsexual.
The thing is that there are concrete things that they can do, they and the Fed, what they can do, and they won't do them. And that's the issue. They're not looking after the best interests of the United States of America. They're looking after their own best interests, which is the consolidation of power.
Yeah, unfortunately, the only two things they really can do is they can sell the assets that they basically the mortgage-backed securities that they've been purchasing for the last decade.
And it'll pull trillions of dollars out of the economy.
And that'll destroy the housing market if they did that.
Well, the housing market is going to get destroyed no matter what they do.
And the other thing is they can raise rates, which was also going to destroy the
housing. They have to raise rates. They're doing it now. And that idiot Janet Yellen came out with, "Oops, I was wrong."
Yeah, big surprise.
Yeah, that was a charming.
Everybody laughs at Alexandria Titicaca for her BA in economics from Boston University, but Janet Yellen just proves that she's equally stupid for doing. Well, she's not stupid; she's malfeasant. You don't do these things to an economy when you borrow and borrow, when you pump trillions of dollars into an economy where you're creating hyperinflation, you are creating Zimbabwe, you are creating Weimar Germany, and for her to not know that, for Ocasio-Cortez to not know this is, of course, understandable. For someone like Janet Yellen to not know this, that's intentional now. This is total malfeasance. They know they're doing it. The same thing with this whole Green New Deal crap with going away from oil and boasting about the fact that we're using this crisis as a means to transition to non-fossil fuels. This is suicidal. This is, you don't do this. You don't do this blindly, Pollyanna-ishly. You're doing it knowing full well it's going to cause pain. Maybe they underestimate the pain, thinking that there is, a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. But no, it's going to hit them in the head sooner than they think, as it is now.
There is, by the way, another way of easing inflation, and that is growing the economy. And unfortunately, the policies of the Democrat Party and the junta in charge right now are pretty much designed to shut down any possible growth that we might have on the horizon.
Yeah, biggest thing you can do to grow the economy is you grow oil production. Yeah, Trump proved that.
Yep,
that is it. Hey, let's take a break. We'll be back in just a second. And we're back for a final segment on the podcast, and I think it's inevitable we have to talk once again about firearms, gentlemen, in the wake of this horrendous mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas, and both the response, how it happened, is the inept and incompetence of the police department there, which led to the deaths of 21 people, and of course the political response in Washington to grab the guns once more.
Let me jump in here. There is something I want to say, and this is troubling me a little bit. One of the things I can't get past, and I've thought about it for the ever since this occurred, is I just picture these poor children in a classroom, a guy coming to them to shoot them, the terror that they would feel in those last moments. It's a horrible, horrible thing, and it infuriates me to see this kind of thing politicized by anybody, but to see some people like Chuck Schumer immediately turn around and try to turn this into a political issue, or Beto O'Rourke with that little stunt he tried to pull down there, mm-hmm. anybody who can't have the humanity to think about what a horrible situation, what a terrifying situation this had to be for those poor children, and to then turn around and say, I'm going to use this as a political weapon, it's evil, absolutely evil.
What really saddens me is that these children were taught by their parents, taught by their teachers, to call 911, that the police will help them. And the record apparently is emerging that many of these children called 911 over and over and over again, and the police did not come to help them. And that must have been incredibly painful for them to do exactly as they were taught. Because, of course, the nice policeman on the corner is going to come and save me from this bad man. And it really is a shock to the system, I think, when we see what these policemen did not do. You know, they were happy to cash their paychecks when there wasn't anything to do. And yet, when something arrived on their doorstep that really required them to do their jobs, to step up, to take their own lives as secondary to the lives of the people whom they promised to protect, and they ignored that. I find that a really, really troubling thing, because that's not American. I think America is exceptional for many, many reasons, but one of them is the way we behave in times of crisis. And that failed us during this school shooting. And I don't know, I hope it's not a harbinger of even worse things to come, but I'm certainly not happy about the way these men, you know, I'm being polite when I call them men, how these men behaved.
You know, the shining example was supposed to be the tragedy of 9/11. When those planes hit, and what did the police and the emergency workers and the firemen do? They ran into the building. They ran in to save people's lives. There's one story where a gentleman was off duty. He had just come off shift, and he was in Brooklyn. And he saw what happened, and he literally ran. He ran into the Battery Tunnel, ran in and then up outside, and then ran in, and then the building collapsed and killed him. And they do the Tunnel to Towers race every year. But
yep.
for some reason...
One of my brats ran that race.
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
But now, and this is the second time this kind of nonsense and insanity happened, as we all know, 5 years ago, I guess it was, or 4 years ago in Broward County at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, when another crazy gunman was on the loose. And what did the police do? They sat around and they ran. Either they were cowards, or they sat behind their police cruisers and, you know, we were waiting for backup, or they were doing whatever they were doing. And I'm going, my God, you guys are armed with weapons. One, I understand it's a fluid situation. There's a fog of war going on, but you go in, you have to do it. There's no, look, I could sit here and be a Monday morning quarterback all I want. And I can honestly say, well, unless you're in their shoes, you know, what would you do? But this is what you're trained to do. You are trained to put your life on the line to save others. And if you can't do that, you should not be in that job. Now, what is the mitigating factor in all of this? What are some of the mitigating factors? Well, maybe it's the fear of being sued. Maybe it's the fear of who knows what, or the fact that there's a war against police from the far left that want to abolish the police. Maybe these are things that are running through their mind, but and you're getting poor quality of, as a result, poor quality of recruits to come and join the force. But surely these guys must have been on the force for a period of time that predates this. They must have been on the force, some of them, or one of them, or two, when 9/11 happened.
I don't know that we can blame the current hatred of the police by the bien passant. I think this is, if I had to choose a reason for it, I think it's the growth of the administrative state. It's the growth of the sense that the municipality is going to pay for everything, that this is the job, that we're not really important, that we're simply cogs in the municipal machine, that we are no longer brave men and even women who are willing to do a tough job and lay their lives on the line. It's just a paycheck now. And that is certainly, at least in part, because of the growth of our government. The Leviathan is even bigger than anybody could have possibly imagined. By the way, the gentleman that J.J. Sefton was talking about was a man named Stephen Siller.
Yes.
And he was assigned to Brooklyn Squad 1, and he got off shift, heard what happened, ran through the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel with his equipment, and died in the collapse of, I don't remember which of the towers. And his father started this charity, which is quite a good charity. So if anybody's interested, it's called the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. I give every year, and I'm happy to give. They're good people.
Yeah, I've heard about that charity, and I've heard that they do some excellent work. You know, part of what troubles me here is it is, and I think this troubles everybody, is it is so unexpected. Not the school shooting. We've had enough of those happen. They happened recently. You know, that part doesn't surprise us. You know, but the response of the police just is not what we have grown to expect, not things we've seen out of our you know, police force, you know, not even recently. And I take the position on everything like this is I just say wait and see. I want to see what happens. I want more information before I rush to judgment. And I'm not saying that anybody did anything right or anybody did anything wrong yet, but I do want to hear what actually happened. And we have a lot of conflicting stories going on right now. There are stories that one of the teachers was responsible, or one of the teachers isn't responsible. You've got the police union fighting the teachers union over who's responsible and all of this. And in the meantime, you have the usual suspects using this as a pretext to push their political agenda, which has nothing to do with school safety and everything to do with trying to disarm the population. You know, I just know people aren't serious when they aren't willing to talk about the actual issue. If we wanted to talk about school safety, I think we could have that conversation about school safety. We could have a very interesting conversation about red flag laws right now and talk about their validity and value and whether or not enough information about potential mass murderers is being put out there based on the juvenile justice system. But as long as people aren't willing to have an honest conversation, then a conversation isn't going to happen.
A couple of observations that I just have. Number one is that it's funny, just over the last 10 years, we were noticing, especially during the Obama reign of error, the militarization of police forces. All of a sudden, they were getting all this surplus army equipment and military equipment, and then here you have a situation which requires a response like that, and then what good was it all? What was that really used for? But that's something else. The real root of this thing, as I think I tried to point out, and I think Michael Walsh and Daniel Greenfield did a much better job of it, is the emasculation of male society, the actual cultural rot that destroyed the family and destroyed family values and destroyed the father, that leads to young men literally going crazy and acting out this way. All this cultural rot, all the societal rot that's been building for the last 50, 60 years leads to these kind of incidents. And it's just, this is where the root of the problem is. When you have a breakdown of ethics, when you have a breakdown of morality and a breakdown of every sort of societal norm, and it's all about do it, if it feels good to you, do it, and all of these things, and you have all this alienation, issues like this, you know, incidents like this are naturally, they're going to happen sooner or later. The fact that it didn't happen until, you know, maybe 15 years ago or so, or 20 years when it started, the first big one was Columbine. Yeah, that was the first big one that really hit the news. You know, then it started happening, you know, 1, 2, 3 times a year. And then naturally it was the horrible AR-15 and the AK-47 that got the blame. And, of course, America.
But, you know, as usual, the data are being tortured by the left-wing media. As shocking as these shootings are, and they're horrible, they don't happen very frequently. But to Dave's point about red flag laws and the larger issue of mental health in the United States, I think that's something that we've really dropped the ball on. The idea of a red flag law being applied to an adult is one thing. I find that disturbing in the extreme. But when we're talking about adolescents who begin to exhibit antisocial behavior, psychotic behavior, you know, killing cats, this psycho, small penis coward is his full name, by the way, in case you've forgotten, that this psycho was, you know, killing cats and bullying people. That's the kind of behavior that I think society can deal with much more aggressively than it has in the past. These are minors. These are not adults. They do not have all of the rights that an adult American has. And I think that's probably a good thing. And the fact that they drop the ball over and over and over again with this lunatic makes me wonder how comprehensive even well-meaning school systems are when it comes to identifying and dealing with antisocial behavior in these adolescents.
I think it was the Daniel Greenfield piece, you know, earlier this week that you quoted, JJ. I think he talked about this. I thought he talked about it very eloquently, that in the past, these kinds of situations were dealt with by the community. There was a moral foundation that the community would identify and find ways to deal with people like this. And the abdication of the community standards and the community policing of these kinds of problems is what brings us to the forefront, that you end up with this kind of a situation. You know, it part of it is, you know, no fathers in the household and things of that nature, you know, but overall, we as a society have abdicated in favor of the state.
Yes, that's exactly what his point was. I mean, it's in today's frontpagemag.com if you want to go see it. He's basically saying evil is a human void. He's basically calling it good and evil, and that's exactly what it is. The left believes that government is God, and it conceives of evil as disobedience to government. The gun control debate reduces evil to the NRA and anyone who won't obey and hand over their guns. Do you want more kids to die? The gun controllers demand, but good and evil don't come from a gun, nor do they come from the government. The reduction of individual choices to mechanical abstractions, shootings to guns, individual acts to society is the mark of elites who want to rule the world yet can't understand people. There's no formula more likely to convince people that their acts have no value, that their lives no purpose, and that whatever they do doesn't matter in any larger sense. And so evil is born.
I think that's very eloquent. Very eloquent. Yeah. You know, and one further point to you, which I can't really improve on that. You know, you can tell people aren't serious when they just go immediately to gun control, you know, gun confiscation, gun buybacks, what have you. You know, how many guns are in the United States right now in private ownership? I mean, actually taking guns out of private ownership is an impossible task. Even if we wanted to do it, we couldn't do it. So if you're going to be serious about it, you have to talk about the real problem and addressing the real problem, not fantasy.
That's a very good point. There are hundreds of millions of guns in circulation that they know about, probably double or triple that they have no idea about. I can give you an example. My father, the first pistol he ever bought was mail order. He bought it in the early 60s. It was an Astra 600, you know, Spanish Army surplus. And he bought it for 50 bucks or something like that. And it came in a box delivered by the Postal Service. There's no record of that anywhere. The company is long gone. It could have been bought and sold 10 times. Nobody would have any idea where it is. So, as Dave said, the idea that the government can confiscate our guns is ridiculous in the extreme. The question is, are they going to try?
Oh, hell yeah. Without a doubt. And just circling back to, circling back, as we say, to Daniel Greenfield's great article, is just the reason that they go to this constantly is because this is on their hands, just as surely as the Uvalde every weekend that happens in the inner cities where you have dozens of black youths killing each other. This is at their feet. All of their social, you know, the Great Society, the War on Poverty, all of these programs that literally destroyed the family created this bloodbath. And it created a bloodbath. It's the same thing with Planned Parenthood, with the abortion bloodbath, and its crime, and its societal dissolution, the dissolution of the family. All of these things are designed supposedly with good intentions, but like the road to hell, but ultimately result in just in such destruction and just accrual of power in the government. And then, of course, it's lather, rinse, repeat. Oh, we have to do more of these things. We need more midnight basketball. We need more welfare programs, and we need, you know, and on and on. So they'll never take the blame for this, but that is where they'll never do mental health, because when you get to the root of the mental health problem, it's what's caused all these things is all of this cultural rot that has taken place since the late 50s into the early 60s, period, end of story.
So circling back to Poland.
Why not?
Circling back, the majority in this country, and it's probably a supermajority, is of the opinion that they would very much like to see an American revitalization, a return to a more traditional way of ordering ourselves. And that's not saying they don't agree with things like gay marriage or things of that nature, but the confusion and the cultural rot and the constant whipsawing back and forth, the vast majority of this country are just tired of it. They want stability, and they don't want stability given through state action and adherence to the state, because they inherently don't trust it. and they've seen that the managerial class is a bunch of idiots. So there is the opportunity. Now, whether or not we can, as a population, regain control of our destiny, or we do slide into tyranny, I don't have that answer. But I can tell you what the people do want, and they want the former.
Well, you know, there's a great slogan for that. It's "Make America Great Again." Not that I'm pushing Trump, but that essentially, you know,
It is a great slogan. It really is.
I'm going to put Dave on the spot. I like doing that. And ask him his opinion of the 2024 presidential election and whether my favorite, DeSantis, should run. And if he does run, will he win? And if he does not run, will Trump run, and will Trump win?
I think we covered this last time,
but
no, there's been no change. Trump is
no
going
change.
To run.
Okay.
Trump is going to run. I don't think there's any. And you pointed out last time that part of it is Trump's ego. Right now, I think the most likely scenario, Trump runs and Trump wins against all comers. I think the Democrats are going to have no choice. Biden's going to run, and they're going to have to get in line. So it's going to be Trump versus Biden again.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
What I think is going to happen. But again, it's early. We are not past 22 yet. So, you know, barring something that causes a 25th Amendment situation, I don't see Biden standing down.
Well, his health is just, I mean, it's amazing that he's able to even whatever the health his doctors are giving him, he's able to fake it fairly well. That's fading away.
Yeah, I don't know about that. People with any experience with relatives who are suffering from dementia understand that there are flashes of coherence that can last for hours. But obviously, the trend is bad.
My mother has dementia. I dealt with it for years, and it's hard to watch.
It's excruciating. And what amazes me though is that my mother recently died. After probably 5 years of dementia, and I more than many people should feel some compassion for Joe Biden, because I can see in him what my mother went through, and yet I feel very little compassion for him.
Your mother wasn't a 50-year criminal and gonoff who sold America down the river so that he can personally profit, and also a vicious racialist. What's really horrible, I mean, it's almost as horrible as that is his wife allowing them to do this to him. Forgetting his criminality to begin with. The fact just that he's a dementia patient, putting it out there like that is just, you've got to be some
sick
mother.
But you know, something
that
speaks to what Dave said earlier, but they're willing to do anything to retain power.
The person who I absolutely can't stand is Jill Biden because of what she is doing. I could not imagine putting my mother through what they're putting him through.
Yeah.
Just can't imagine it. Now, back to your point, though, if I'm wrong, you know, and you know, Trump isn't that young either, right? If something were to happen to Trump, you know, and we do have a 24 where DeSantis is running, DeSantis wins easily against all comers.
Amazing.
I love hearing it. Dave, you're a voice crying out in the wilderness today. The voice of optimism, but you don't.
Yeah, a lot of people don't agree with me, and that's fine.
Well, that's okay.
No, Dave, your prognostications are spot on. And again, I do.
Hey, I got really, Florida right. I said six months ahead. I said Trump wins by 400,000 votes. He won by 395,000.
Again, I don't believe me. I don't doubt you, and I feel I feel horrible that that you feel bad that somehow, because I always mention the evil, Chinese overlord Dao Mingyan, that it's a shot at you, and it's not a shot at you. It's just a shot at everything. It's not
the situation. I get it.
It's the situation. It's not you. Because
question, and I know we're running long, but Dave, most of us know exactly what happened in 2020. What will change in 2024?
It's already changed. Okay, you have new laws in Arizona, you have new laws in Florida, you have new laws in Georgia, you have new laws coming in Wisconsin.
Yahoo!
There are Pennsylvania's a kind of a weird one, and a lot of it depends on whether or not they can change the governor there.
They're still counting the damn votes. They still don't know. It's crazy.
I know. But you know, there was new voting laws in Pennsylvania, and actually, what has happened is you've had a reversion to the previous laws, and Wolf's executive privileges were taken away by the legislature there.
Yeah.
So they returned to their old voting system, which strictly limited absentee ballots. You saw changes in the law in Virginia. And hopefully, the big thing that will change is people understand how, you know, if they're going to cheat in 24, they're going to have to find a different way to do it. Because now people understand that you have to challenge the canvas. You can't allow, you know, if you just go in and say, try to do a recount, it's too late at that point. You have to challenge the legality of the votes themselves before they go into the counting process. And that was the mistake Trump made. He did not challenge the canvas. He tried to he tried to challenge the count.
Some good news actually came out of the Supreme Court today with Judge Justice Alito throwing out the lower court some suit that challenged the absentee ballots that were undated, that were supposed to be included in, I think it was maybe even this previous count for the primary. He said no way, and he threw it out. So that's definitely a good harbinger of things to come. So
The one thing that did come out of 2020 is that the Supreme Court was very clear that the states have control over their voting process. And a lot of states have cleaned it up. They're cleaning up the voting rolls and they're cleaning up the processes.
Well, on that hopeful note, gentlemen, CBD, Dave in Florida, this is J.J. Sefton. Thanks for stopping by, and we will see you again on the next Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. Gentlemen, thanks again.
Thanks for listening, folks.